Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the War Room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hours show to get the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Boom, with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4th of 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the War Room, with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What up, sports fans? You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you, of course, by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jimmy Williams and B. Austin. We got some big stories from the week of sports, so we're going to dive right in. But before we do, make sure you join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. Or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to get into the conversations. You can also call us directly when we open up that digital extreme tech hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. Also, we can't forget to put you on to some of the best sports talk out there. So make sure you check out our partners, Roy and Chris, on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. And check the listings for Brandon and Daniel on Sports Trap Radio. Both of these shows are on Blog Talk Radio. But don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch all these guys and all of our other partner podcasts and webcasts at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition to that, don't forget to catch us, your boys, in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newviberadio.com. We're on at 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. What's good, generals? What's new for the week?
Man, you already, man. You trying to stay out of trouble, good brother.
Yeah,
it's trouble. The best 2 hours of our listeners' lives.
Yeah, I thought he was about to say my life. He said our listeners.
I know, you put that on y'all.
This guy. I mean, put it like this, Dev. I put it like this. I'm doing better than AP right now, man.
Yeah. AP got bills now. And besides, I mean, you know, rest in peace to his 2-year-old, but
yeah,
it's coming out
to the young one. Man.
It's definitely come out after the fact that he got bills now. So we'll talk about
man,
that in a minute.
Man, apologies in order to the son of my daughter.
We'll definitely rap about that in a minute, but yeah, you know,
AP got kids.
This weekend,
I got kids.
War Room Sports was down in Tampa, covering that Eagles-Bucks game. You know, it's a double the pleasure because I'm an Eagles fan. So being down there amongst other Birds fans was pretty cool. Even though, you know, I talk about a lot of other fan bases, but when you get to talking to your own, I don't know. It might just be a universal thing, man. But other than that, it was a pretty good game. Tampa Bay Buccaneers gave some fight. Didn't have enough fight in them. Everybody wants the coach fired. Check out the piece I wrote on that at worldroomsports.com/blog. All right, but we're going to get right into the show. And I'm going to let everybody know what happened this week while y'all were on the grind. Of course, on the Grind is brought to you by DirecTV, and if you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including that NFL Sunday ticket, you know, what real men watch on Sundays, go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, order yourself a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. If you call yourself a sports fan, you got to have DirecTV. And for all you new subscribers out there, don't forget, your first year, they give you the NFL Sunday ticket for free, so you know, you better go ahead and do that because those of us that are paying for it now, we pay a grip to get our football every Sunday. So go ahead and do that. All right, this is something that we posted on our Facebook page earlier. So if you're on the website, I mean, if you're online, just go check it out as we talk about it. In our photo section, it's probably the latest photo that we posted, so it should be somewhere on the page for today. Oregon, they plan to wear, you know, not only pink wristbands, cleats, socks, things like that. They're going to wear pink helmets on Saturday in their game against Washington State. What do you guys think about that? I mean, you know, October is breast cancer Awareness Month, and all the NFL teams do it. You know, some college teams, you know, do the pink thing. But the pink helmet, is this just a great gesture for a great cause, or is Oregon, Nike, Phil Knight, are they taking it a little too far? What do you guys think?
Well, they're legislating against defense in the game. They're legislating against hitting.
Oh,
game.
God.
They're taking away. And before, understand that I'm sensitive to the plight of cancer victims and survivors. My grandmother passed away from cancer. My mother passed away from cancer. So I think that, you know, breast cancer being one of those forms, we have to celebrate those survivors and put as much behind it. But this is a marketing ploy. It's rather feminine to me, man.
All right, but I don't want to hear you talking about. I don't want to hear you talking about what they're legislating out of the game. Because last week you was on here about the cry, talking about how that Frontline documentary changed your life. So you know why they're legislating.
He said it changed his life. Here's the thing. Here's the thing, man. I've had a number of people in my family pass away from cancer. So as B. Austin said, I'm also sensitive to this issue, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. I actually think the uniform is kind of dope. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it is what it is. I mean, they got the Nike money behind them. Oregon always got the best uniforms. I think Sean is dope.
See, but that's what
even
I'm...
Even if
that's,
it is.
Okay, even if it's...
Okay, even if it is a market employee, yo, it's a dope one.
Yeah. I mean, because that's actually why I asked, because we know Nike, once a fad, a trend, or something starts, Nike definitely takes everything to the next level. So I'm like, are pink helmets really necessary? Like, are you not showing your support for breast cancer if you just do the little pink accessories like everybody else? But we all know that Oregon is backed by Nike, so they basically have new
uniforms
every
thing,
damn week.
Here's the thing, Dev. It's one of those things where you have to think about whether it even matters, because at the end of the day, by them doing this and making news with these uniforms, they are bringing attention, you know, to the cause. I mean, it's like a guy who has a couple million bucks and he sets up a nonprofit.
I think they're bringing attention to themselves.
I mean, but also the cause, because everybody's going to wonder what the hell is going on. Like, this is making news because they're doing this. I saw this on a number of sports blogs and you know, things today. So they're bringing attention, even if it's indirectly, to what the cause
right.
is.
Now, I mean, y'all know me, how I have, like, arguments with myself over certain issues. And, you know,
absolutely.
One part of me says, what is it hurting? But then another part of me is like, you know, we don't want to get to the point where we're exploiting the cause. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
you know,
see,
I think this
I
might be borderline.
Here's my analogy. My analogy is this. If you got a guy that got a couple million dollars like B. Austin, right, and he sets up a nonprofit in order to give back, but his reason for doing so is really for a tax write-off, does it make the nonprofit any less valuable to the community? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, regardless
if,
of
if they're still doing back. Their job, then yeah.
Exactly. So if you're still,
you know, some of them Jones, they just do the tax write-off and they don't do a damn thing for the community. But if
yeah,
it's both,
out to Antoine
Walker. I see what you're saying.
But yo, it's like it's like this though. At the end of the day, if they're bringing attention to the cause, even if it's for personal gain, I mean, they're still bringing attention to the cause, because a lot of people have, like, you know, put gloves, socks, like you said, all kinds of things on, and we didn't talk about any of them.
Hmm. I mean, it's you're right. I guess you got to take it too far to get the attention.
Yeah, I mean, more or less, that's the society we live in, man. You got turned up.
All right.
Whoa, I don't use that term.
I mean, it is, man. I said the society we live in. That's what you got to do.
You got to turn up.
You got to.
I tell my young bulls, put a hat on it. Don't burn up. Never mind. Go ahead, man.
All right, man. Yeah, I hear about your man, Dwight Howard. He's actually upset with the Orlando Magic because he found out that they've given his number 12 to somebody else. That player they granted it to was Tobias Harris. Not a lot of people know Tobias Harris, but if you're a basketball purist, you know that this kid, I don't know, he's pretty good. I don't know if that's going to mean he's going to make a mark in the league. But Howard said when he found out about it, this is what he said to the Orlando Sentinel. There are some things that was later on in the thing. He just said, I think despite whatever happened, there was a lot of things that I did and that we did as a team, and that number was special down there. And I was a little bit upset about that. What do you guys think? Do you think the right Howard has a right to feel this way? Do you think his member should be retired in Orlando?
First,
man, go get him, Jimmy. Get him.
First off, that's very Trisvini. That's very Trisvini on the part of one Dwight Howard. Second, when I first saw the story, I had to think what his number was. Like that's how much of a mark his number meant. You know what I mean? Like there's certain numbers. Like I mean, eventually I figured out okay, it's 12. But I'm just saying there's certain guys like you say 23, and I think of Magic 32, Kareem 33, Barkley 34, AI 3. Like I don't have to really think about damn what is his number. So your mark wasn't that. You ain't really do nothing for real, Duke. Like I don't even associate the number with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Johnny Dalton's number.
And the thing, I don't know if he knew this when he complained, but the guy, Tobias Harris, he was acquired by Orlando in a trade from Milwaukee, and he wears that number in tribute to one of his friends who died from leukemia as a teenager. So not only are you looking sensitive in Trezvani, you know what I'm saying?
Selfish.
There's a story behind it that whether you knew it or not, you know, to the people, to the public, it's going to make you look like an a-hole. Because this dude is trying to tribute his friend. But, yeah, but B. Austin, I mean, just back to the pure part of the story, do you think Dwight Howard's number should be retired in Orlando?
That's a great question.
Absolutely not. And I think that this is just yet another case of us, not the media in general and the general air of society and the sport today, talking and focusing on something other than winning. And it's like Dwight Howard wants to be celebrated for everything around the game that he's done as opposed to his focus on competitive greatness and winning. And that's the beef that a lot of older players and folks like us that grew up watching 70s, 80s, and 90s basketball have a problem with this generation. You're talking about everything but trying to win, trying to kill your opponent to get to the championship. You're focused on your number, dog.
All right. Now,
they,
number.
Gave, they gave Penny's number away in Orlando. So
I
why
agree.
Should his number?
I agree with you completely. And to Dev's point, I think Penny is more of an Orlando Magic than, say, Dwight Howard. I think of Penny and Shaq when I'm thinking of Magic. You know, Shaq ain't played there in years. But to your point,
I think Penny has done more for the game than Dwight, and he's not even going to the Hall.
But here's my thing, though. Here's my thing. It's a couple points that come up when you talk about this. The first thing is I agree with you that we're not talking about that, but you also have to understand where we are in terms of media and coverage. It's like we get so much information and there's so many interviews and so many sit-downs that we're now hearing about all these other things just because we have access. We didn't have this access. I mean, if we did, who's to say that Jordan or anybody else wouldn't talk about these type of things in the middle of talking about killing their opponent? My problem is, this whole concept of, like, celebrating players, and I know we're going to talk about Manning later, but the fact that we're celebrating players as we play is, like, they've already diminished the Hall of Fame, and we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame later as well, but now they're diminishing everything. This guy's talking about having his number retire from a team when you're still young and in the league. You understand what I'm saying? Like, is Evan Turner going to want his number retired next year by the Sixers?
What,
like,
what has Dwight Howard done to deserve?
Hey, Jimmy, Dwight Howard going to want a statue in front of the Amway Center next year.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, what happens to body of work, yo? You have guys literally waited years to have their number retired by a team and extra years. It's like, and I guess it goes to society always wanting, you know, the society, as B. Austin calls it, the microwave society, you know, what you call it, immediacy is what everybody wants, immediacy. So
culture
part
of immediacy.
The culture
prisoners
of immediacy.
Of the
That's the B. Austin quote, the culture of immediacy. And with them living in that culture of immediacy, Jokers even want their number retired like 2 years in now. Like, that's where
I mean, but fans perpetuate this stuff. Now, he's not getting any love from the fans because nobody likes Dwight anymore. But, you know, you always hear fans, every good player deserves a statue. Like, yo, this is sports. Like, these people aren't really doing that much in the larger scheme of life, but fans want everybody to have a statue. Bill Russell is just now on opening night. Bill Russell is just now about to get a statue in Boston, and he did stuff that transcended the game of basketball. Like 16 million people and got statues before him, and everybody thinks every good sports athlete should have a statue.
So now
it's just getting too much worship, man. idol worship.
The question begs, is it the player's fault that they, or are they a victim of where society is today? And I think, Jimmy, you kind of are giving them an out, but it's a reasonable out because they are coming from the society that does this. Hero worship,
I don't know about a victim. They just might be, they're feeling themselves. They're smelling themselves.
I mean, they're, as we always say, they're a microcosm of everything else. This is where we're at. I mean, dude, they're going to try to, like, change the Hall of Fame thing now. Now you should be eligible 1 year out. Like, people just want praise immediately.
I'm not sacrificing my beliefs because of where we are as a society.
No,
I think
and a
softy and a Trezvanian dude for
now,
everything that he does.
Now, we have a comment in our chat room from Michael Bonner. He says, there have been players who have done way less with their numbers retired. He said, aside from Shaq, he's the best player to ever put on a Magic jersey. 7-time All-Star, 3-time defensive player, 5-time rebound leader, 4-time All-Defensive. You know, so 5-time. So he's giving me his statistics, but he's saying outside of Shaq, he's the best Magic player ever. I mean,
arguable, but even if it's
that's
true,
that's very arguable.
So what? You left the team 2 years ago. Why do you think – no, not even 2 years ago. Why should your jersey be retired?
And Michael,
I don't really get
give
that.
Us a comment on that. Give it a comment on that because, Michael, with Devin saying – Devin, you're saying you don't disagree that he deserves to have retired, but why are you bitching about it now?
I'm saying I don't know in the long run. But even if the Orlando Magic wants to do that in the long run, okay, let that happen in the long run. You know, a lot of people who have had their jerseys retired, a few people wore it after them if they just left the team, and then once the organization decides, okay, we should do this for this guy, then it no longer can be worn. So, I mean, they did it for Michael Jordan for the whole league, but people wore 23 after him. They just decided at some point, this is what we're going to do. If Dwight turns out to be that type of guy and Orlando thinks that they should do that, then fine. But a year after you just bounce from the team in a way that the fans in the city didn't really like, you know, you leaving, I don't think you can complain about this right now.
The game, even if you want to look at it technically, the game really is about the fans, and he disrespected the fan base with his actions in Orlando. So why should he be celebrated by an organization where something such as jersey retirement really is about fan appreciation? When did Dwight Howard ever appreciate the fans in Orlando?
And Mike was like, he took them to the finals with little help. Like, I don't really believe in that. But at the same time, if your sentence says he won them the finals with little help, case closed. Dwight, bitch all you want. Like, I won the finals with nothing. Retire my jersey. All right, cool. Let him bitch. All right, but let's move on from Dwight for a minute. We want to keep talking about it in the chat room, Facebook, Twitter. We can do that. We brought it up a little bit earlier. You know, everybody knows the story from late last week where Adrian Peterson's 2-year-old son was killed by his mother's boyfriend. Come to find out a little while after that, because, you know, the whole internet went crazy and was posting pictures of Adrian Peterson's 2-year-old son that he lives with, but this is not the one who passed on. This is a crazy situation, and I think it's besides Adrian Peterson, he just found out that he was this child's father maybe 2 or 3 months before he died. He claims in an article that I was reading today that he was planning on seeing him. He talked with his mom, and he got some things together as far as financially helping her until this situation happened. But everything's coming out after that, you know, that was a secret child. He has another secret child. And a lot of fans I saw, you know, didn't like the media taking that approach. But like Jimmy said, information's out there. Things are going to get talked about. People indulge. So first of all, what do you guys think about the coward who beat a 2-year-old to death? And then the subsequent stories that are coming out about Adrian Peterson and all his secret love children. It's a child.
And I'm sure, you know, there are a lot of parents that feel the same way. Having a child and watching your children grow.
First of all, Bielson, I thought you were about to say I having secret love children spread around the country.
Nah.
But go ahead, my bad. That's what I thought you were about to say. I'm like, what?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. But having a child, it changes you psychologically, emotionally. I can't. I'm like squeamish like a woman when it comes to hurting children or hearing about it, seeing it. I can't. It haunts me. Like, I see it if I hear about, like, so the dude that did that, like, I would love to be in a room with him for just 3 minutes. I'll take the punishment.
Yo, my thing is this, like, I don't understand what can make you do that to a child. And I know both of you gentlemen have sons, so I know it hits you in a whole different way, but I don't get it. I don't like to hear no old folks and no babies, man. Like, I didn't even want to talk about this, but I know we have to talk about this. Let's put it that way, because it bothers me in a certain type of way.
The defenseless and the innocent.
Yeah, man, like, what could possibly make you do that? And this whole story just bothered me in so many ways. First off, the fact that he did this to the child, then the reaction from the masses.
He has priors.
So he has priors, and then I'm hearing still. See, I don't know what the truth is. I heard that there's another gentleman who's claiming to be the kid's father. The kid is named after. So cut him off.
No. It's a situation where he knows the deal. He thought, you know, for most of those 2 years that this was his child. The child is named after him.
That's what I'm saying.
But then they found out that it was really Adrian Peterson's. So he's basically saying, you know, for the 2 years that the child was here, I raised this child,
and
everybody's like,
that.
Poor Adrian Peterson. So he's basically looking for some sympathy himself.
But my point was, it's making me look at the mother sideways. Like, all right, so you lied about who the child's father was with the one boy, so you cut him off. Then you immediately, like, I don't know how soon it was, but you move another dude in with you? Like,
and you deal with a dude, you don't check his background, he has priors, he's a nut dude. So you got to look at her sideways.
Yeah, I look at her sideways, and then, like, AP's whole life came crumbling down because now, at the last check, it was, like, 7 babies by 6 different women. Like, there's, like, a new baby every 2 hours now. So his whole persona and everything is changing. And I also get pissed at the writers who, before the 7 kids, when they found about just the one situation, would completely go in on Adrian Peterson, talking about how bad of a guy he was, the culture and sports of the baby mama culture is what they called it. Because we don't know all the facts, so how can you judge someone based upon that? Now more facts are coming out. You know, go ahead and judge away. But as soon as this happened, some of the articles I read, I was like, damn, seriously? You know.
Well, they jumped to conclusions, but he is looking, his life is looking closer and closer to Travis Henry's. So
absolutely. Travis Henry, what's the boy's name who forgot his kid's name on TV? Cromartie? Was that Cromartie?
Cromartie, yeah. Antonio Cromartie.
See, yeah, but the thing is, like, you know, because we joke about it, but there was a question asked on our page the other day about, you know, Adrian Peterson and the 6 kids, however many he has, by however many women. Like, will that affect his marketability, you know, his endorsements and things like that?
Of course.
And while a lot of people were going to jump to his defense and say, no, this and that, like, you can't speak from your heart and what you think it
should. Absolutely, it will.
We all know
absolutely
the way the world works, and we know, especially, you know, in this whole sports marketing thing, that anything you do outside of your sport, like, they'll give you all the money in the world for what you can do on that field, on that court, or whatever. But as soon as you do something that they may deem, you know, just not up to their standards, then it will affect what you do. I mean, you can say, you can voice your political opinions one time in the news and lose an endorsement. So hell yeah, if somebody
it's
even has to say what Jimmy just said, quote unquote baby mama culture, if that's even a term out there, then you know endorsers are using it, and it's something that they don't like. So it could definitely
it's all about perception. It's all about curating. We've seen athletes that weren't really even guilty of what they were accused of, lose endorsements. We've seen a player on the Lakers who's arguably the greatest or second greatest two guard ever. He lost tons of endorsement dollars for something he wasn't really guilty of what he was accused of. It matters.
Yo, I know I'm bringing light to the situation, but at KCMac38 on Twitter says AP's going to get some Pamper and Gerber endorsements. But
yo, he need to get some Trojan endorsements for real.
Yeah, that's what he really needs.
Vasectomy. Vasectomy endorsements.
He's dumping in everything right now. But here's the thing. It's like this, man. You have
LeaveItIn.com. You took that seriously.
Yeah, definitely. See, Austin, this goes to the culture again, right? It's because we have so much access to these players, and now we know so much about their personal lives that we judge them on that. When in years previous, I remember coming up, I didn't know that much about athletes' personal lives, and I judged them based upon what they did on the court. What bothers me is, okay, now if you lose endorsements, you lose endorsements. And I've actually seen people start to talk about how he's not that good of a player, and their logic is, he's not that good of a player because of what he does off the field. That is what bothers me the most.
Now that's crazy.
That is what bothers me the most, is when people start talking about their accomplishments as an athlete based upon them as a person. Like, you have to separate the two. I mean, that's like saying O.J. Simpson wasn't one of the greatest running backs of all time. That's BS. He definitely was. Is he a creep as a person? Probably. He probably is. But they're two different things. You understand what I'm saying? So
now we live in the age of the personal brand. It's all
probably
personal branding.
Yeah,
so all of this stuff gets tied together. It's not fair. It's not right. And it really shows the nature of human beings, because we are so quick to judge and put people in the public eye who have fame out in the court of public opinion. The court of public opinion and perception is far more valuable and far more screwed up than even the justice system. I mean, because people will jump to conclusions based on their limited knowledge, and sponsors know. Sponsors understand this. So it's not about right or wrong, good or bad. It's about how the masses perceive and how that affects the dollars spent. And are you a marketable brand based on how people perceive you? You know, that's what it boils down to.
Right.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely right. That's where we're at now. That's where we're at. You're right.
We all know that there's a big football game going on this weekend between Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning is going back to Indianapolis for the first time. Now, we'll definitely talk about this in depth in the second hour when we're talking our NFL talk. But Colts owner Jim Irsay made the news this week by what a lot of people interpreted as a shot at Peyton Manning. Now, you know, I'm going to read the quotes and I'm going to get you guys' opinion on what he said. Now, you know, he was talking about the team, and he's talking about Peyton coming back and everything, but he was also talking about how the team now is, you know, trying to go into another direction. They're trying to make a new model, this and that. So he said to the USA Today, you make the playoffs 11 times, and you're out in the first round 7 out of 11 times. You love to have the Star Wars numbers from Peyton and Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne, but mostly you love this ring. So those are the exact quotes. But the world, like, fell on their heads saying that Jim Irsay took a shot at Peyton Manning because he's basically saying, you know, since we're moving on, we're trying to do something different because for all the stuff that he did, we only got one ring out of it. First of all, do you guys look at it as a shot? And even if you do, like, do you think it was necessary?
I don't think it was a shot. Because here's my thing, Devin. It's the bottom line. If Peyton doesn't feel the same exact way, he's a coward. Because I guarantee you, if you talk to Peyton Manning, he probably does feel the same way. We remember champions. Like, all these stats and everything, they're good. They're cute. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, we remember champions. So would you trade those statistics for more championships? And I think that Peyton would probably
get a
championship,
though. He has one. But this is where Peyton detractors talk like he doesn't have one, though.
No, he has one. But what I'm saying is, if you talk to Peyton Manning and ask him, would he trade some of those gaudy numbers to have two more rings, I'm pretty sure he'll say yes.
I'm pretty sure he'll say yes, too, but I'm not sure how much I would really believe these players anyway. I mean, you still get into the game for individual greatness. You still want to go to the Hall of Fame. You still want to do things like that. So,
I mean, you
at this point in my life, I don't know how much I believe these people when they talk anyway.
Back to perception.
because Charles Barkley is not trading his life to be Robert Horry. I know that.
He,
so like, they may say what they want,
see,
and it's because of what we always say,
I,
Jimmy. It's the whole Michael Jordan effect on sports now.
Oh, I agree with that.
No, not until Mike came around was championships the end-all, be-all of sports.
I agree with that, Dev. But what I'm saying is, as being a quarterback and leader of a team, if you win three championships, I don't give a ish. If you throw the ball three times a game, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. And I don't think it's a comparison of Peyton saying, okay, would I rather win three more championships as a role player? We're not talking about role player versus a star player.
I know you picked the number.
But those gaudy numbers that he put up, one championship, like, I mean, he would be in the Hall of Fame if he didn't win that one championship. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm saying
I know you picked the number. I know you picked number three, but I'm thinking of Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, and Jeff Hostetler, and I'm like, those are guys.
They all
chips.
Have one. They all have one. They don't have multiple.
And
I mean, they
Peyton,
have one championship.
And Peyton has one, and Brett has one. I mean, but we all have to look at the individual seat. And football is the consummate. Football is the consummate team sport. And I have this argument almost every damn day on social media because of. I admit what Michael Jordan culture has done to society. So here's my thing. Jim Irsay and Bill Polian are Richard heads and a-holes for the way I believe that the Colts team was built around Peyton. And I compare and contrast that to what was done in New England with the Patriots. The Patriots knew that they had an all-world quarterback in Tom Brady. They recognize that, they appreciate it, they treat him as such. But the ship must sail on, and they put a lot of time and effort into crafting a winning championship system. And the proof is in the pudding. When Brady goes down, they can still go 11-5. Why? Not because Brady – let me finish. Not because Brady isn't very valuable and isn't a Hall of Famer, but because they know that they need to have a solid, balanced defense. They know that they need to have a solid, balanced offense. They know that they don't want to just depend on Brady. Peyton Manning leaves Indianapolis and you have a 2-14 team? Come on, man. No team should be built like that. No team should be built like that.
That's true.
And I agree to a certain extent. But
that's true, but when you have a certain
weapon,
you know.
Yeah, but if you don't build a team the way you build a team, does he put up those gaudy numbers? Part of the reason he put the gaudy numbers is because they were built on speed the way they were. So it was kind of built for him to do that. Now, was it built to be a championship team? Obviously, I guess not. Now, like Dev said, you can make the argument they were, though. They did win one championship. I don't think what he said was a diss, and I think that outside of Peyton Manning, if you ask Marvin Harrison, if you ask whoever else on the team, the liquored up kicker,
Reggie Wayne.
You ask Reggie Wayne, you ask Edgerrin James, if you ask all of them,
like, hell yeah, they thought they should have won more.
They probably
Jimmy,
think they should have won more, yes. I don't think it's a problem with what he said at all.
On that side of the coin,
it's where he said it and when he said it to me.
No, see, my thing is this, and that's why I asked the question the way I asked it, because that's why I said, you know, the world, everybody just turned on their heads, like, I don't think he took a shot either, and they're saying now because he's trying to explain the context of what he's talking about, everybody's saying he's backtracking. But people really came at this dude's head. Steve Young came at him. Todd Helton, baseball player, really came at him. He resorted to calling the dude names. Like, I really didn't think I didn't think what he said was that serious. I mean, he said, you know, we put up Star Wars numbers, but – you know, this is the thing that matters. I mean, he's the owner. That is the thing that's supposed to matter to him. You know, besides that check that he's getting. But
I've seen a lot of teams do that, and they were great teams. And now, since decades have passed, no one even talks about him. The Bills put up Star Wars numbers. I saw Warren Moon and Houston put up Star Wars numbers, and they were great teams. They just couldn't get over the hump and couldn't get it done. And now they aren't even mentioned in the grand scheme of things. So I understand what he was saying. I don't think it was a shot at all. I think this was something created by the media to market this game. And it's funny because we're part of the media, and I find myself slandering the media like, you know, every 5 sentences. But it's not just
that
the media. It's
the
also
media.
The people.
Not the real media.
Because people feed into this nonsense, too, because I see the arguments, and I just laugh at people like, yo, are you serious?
I agree. I think it was a little bit of a shot. Even Bill Polian took offense to it because, you know, he took it as, you know, he's comparing the new regime to their regime, and he was like, you know, such and such amount of division titles, two Super Bowl appearances, you know, I think we did pretty good for themselves. And I don't disagree with that. Like, you know, everybody who expects just because, you know, it's because certain people do it, everybody's not going to win multiple championships. But you playing two Super Bowls, you win that, you know, with the little run that our Philadelphia Eagles made, if those would have been the results, I would have been cool with that. I don't like the whole the Eagles appeared in the Super Bowl, but we didn't win one. So it's not, you know, if we appeared in two and won one, I'm good with that. But I don't think that he was taking a shot the way people – it may be those type of comments where maybe you didn't have to talk about that leading up to this game. You know, maybe you didn't have to say that part. Mm-hmm. But I still think a lot of people – I think y'all being a little sensitive about that. I don't think you took a shot at
it. Because, Dev, here's my thing. Like, yo, I mean, how many people would trade their team's success for the Colts' success in that time span? Like, even if you did get bounced 7 out of 11 times because your quarterback choked in the playoffs, you still won one championship. You won several division titles. Like, you had a success. And that's the thing. People only measure success by championships, and that's wrong.
That's why they got bounced every time, Jim.
But if you look –
that's why they got bounced.
If you look at the Buffalo Bills, right? Were the Buffalo Bills successful when they went to 4 straight? I mean, you damn right they were successful.
Absolutely.
But no one remembers that, and that's the problem. The problem is how we define success. Dev, what up, Charles Barkley? Did Barkley have a successful career? You damn right he did. But it's how we define success in sports. It just doesn't come down
we're disingenuous behind values that were constructed that we don't really believe in. So ask in the media if you would trade your career. A lot of guys would say
yes.
No, they don't really believe that. I don't want Robert Horry's career, and I'm not a professional basketball player.
But see, Austin, what you're doing is you're comparing to someone who's a star and a contributor to someone who comes in sparing moments. Like, I understand what you're saying. You wouldn't trade Robert.
I'm better at what I do on War Room Sports than Robert Horry is at being a power forward.
All right. Okay, but if you're Peyton Manning, would you trade your career for, say, you know, a Kobe Bryant or a Tim Duncan?
Or keep it football.
But if we're looking
trade his career for Brady?
Now, that's a great question. That's a better comparison. Wouldn't he trade his career for Brady?
I don't think it is. I know one thing he would trade, that Colts defensive system for the Pats defensive system.
No, I'm just saying, would he trade his career for Brady? That's a better question.
That's definitely a better question. But like, if you're asking me, somebody who's gonna be 100% real with it at the same time, like, come on, man. These fans out here, you fooling yourselves if you don't think these guys like the individual attention, the individual adulation. Like, Peyton is looked at by a lot of people in the NFL as a damn god. So he's not trading his career with anybody. It's a different level sometimes. Like, when you hear people talk, like, I'm a big Peyton fan, and I don't go halfway as far as some of these people go. Like, a lot of people act like Peyton's out there by himself.
I saw an advertisement for the game on NBC. Well, I was watching something else, but yo, the advertisement said Peyton Manning versus the Colts this Sunday. that's what it said. NBC put this out there, so I get your point.
I perpetuate that.
Tom Brady is on a crazy level of adulation.
But
right
I don't take that stuff that serious, because here's why. I've seen Peyton Manning worship as a guy.
But you're a hater.
No, it's nothing about being a hater. I'm trying to be honest. Like, yo, I admit when I'm just hating on somebody. I don't just hate on Peyton, but since the day he walked in the league, I've seen him get this adulation, right? But I've also seen when he's had those bad games or he's choked, they turn on him so fast. The same guys who worship him like a god, you know, talk about how he choked.
Peyton Manning is the football equivalent of
Steve Young go in on him. Steve Young went in on him.
So that just makes him the football equivalent of LeBron James. That's all he is.
That would be the analogy on the basketball team.
They're the same player, different sport. You know, LeBron.
Exactly.
LeBron found a way out, so he's going to rack up some championships now because of what he did. And maybe Peyton will do the same thing. You know, maybe he'll keep pace with LeBron in Denver, even though, you know, that wasn't his decision. So. it's crazy. But I'm with you on the main point of this topic. I don't think Jim Irsay was actually taking a shot. The owner was just saying, we had some good times, we did some great things, but with the teams that we had, I don't think we got enough of these. Everybody zeroed in and just made that all about Peyton. He named other people. Right. He named
now,
other people. He said we had Reggie
Michael
Wayne,
Bonner.
We had, this guy, we had that guy, and everybody just zeroed in and say, "Oh, that was about Peyton." That he was
Now what do you think about this? Shout out to Michael Bonner. He made a great point in our chat room. He said that the way he looked at it was Irsay basically telling Andrew Luck, look, you're my guy. He's turning the page. So he's trying to say Irsay was taking a page out of the Jerry Jones playbook.
I think that's a very good point, even though, it's kind of hard to make that point when you're having a ceremony for the dude before the game when he's playing against you. But I'm with Mike. I think it's a very good point. That might have been damage control. He probably looked at it like, damn, this does look a little crazy. We're having a ceremony for the dude right before he's about to try to kill us. So let me get some confidence. But with everybody thinking that he took
a
shot at Peyton, I guess because if he was really just doing that, but everybody perceived it as a shot to Peyton, then it really backfired because really, even though nobody's saying his name, what he really did was put a whole lot of pressure on Andrew Luck because everybody thinks Peyton's going to come in with this laser focus now and try to kill him, and Andrew Luck's job is to try to go toe-for-toe with the man.
Or he might honestly believe that Peyton is a choke and try to put pressure on him to come in and do that. Yo, here's the thing, though. It's like I see him, and you made a great point. Maybe that's his way of doing damage control because it's like, how are you going to have another quarterback? It's not like this guy played 20 years ago. This is the previous quarterback. You're going to give him a blumpkin for 20 minutes and then tell this guy, okay, you're my guy.
Go out and beat him.
You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of ridiculous, man. So, and Michael Bonner said, what did
it
actually
mean? It's a bad scenario. It's a no-win scenario for the quarterbacks in this situation.
I mean, I think it was a good point by Michael in the chat room.
Because
he could be looking out for what's his name, but I still think it might have backfired on
him. Jerry Jones is the king of this. He always, tries to deflect attention, from his players or make statements to his players in the media. And that's
like
why
moral victory.
Well, that's
because that
Jerry Jones loves the attention. He is Johnson. In that Calvin Johnson commercial with Diddy, Jerry Jones is Johnson.
But also listen, though. Like last week with that whole moral victory thing, once he did that, Cass was going on him, so they left Romo alone. You know what I mean? Like, that was his reason for doing that. You know what I mean?
Johnson. We'll pick up. We'll do HOF or FOH next week. I got a good one for you guys. So we'll pick up on that next week.
Man, I was looking forward to it.
Yeah, until we talk 20 minutes about we're still on the grind right now. While y'all were on the grind. Jimmy, who's having a birthday this week, man?
Absolutely. I want to give some birthday shout-outs real quick. We'll make this fast. The birthdays are brought to you by Dr. Monique Grohl of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. We want to thank you for sponsoring the show out there. But for the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Grohl of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. Treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area and beyond, visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. Tell them War Room Sports sent you, or just go to our website and look for the APA, right on the front page of our website, and you can visit the network. Shout out to Dr. Roll. We have some birthdays to talk about. Cordell Stewart turns 41 years old. Birthday.
Shout out to Sid Ziegler, Richard Simmons, and Portia.
Shout out to Manute Bol, one of the best three-point shooters I've ever seen in my life. 51 for Manute. Manute. Tim McCarver turned 72. Rest in peace. Shout out to one Dave the Busher. A couple more shout-outs real quick. Casey Mack, he loves to remind us of birthdays he forgot.
But that's the thing. We don't forget him. We only do four.
Ernie Els, Danny Ferry, John Rocker, oh, God, and Carlos
John
Gonzalez.
John Rocker was the first person I crossed off the list when we did this.
Because you didn't want to go in on John Rocker.
Why would I say happy birthday to John Rocker?
Yo,
actually, the only person that the only person on that list that I didn't have was Ernie L. So,
yo,
no doubt, happy
John
birthday
Walker.
To Ernie L. And John Rocker, he did deals.
Yo, John Rocker,
Jockin,
drop dead wherever you are.
Happy birthday, yay!
Check out our website at warroomsports.com. Make sure you sign up for the War Report while you're there. It's our weekly newsletter. Click on that Contact Us tab to send us a message about the company, the show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us, info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, make sure you click on everything on the site. You can buy memorabilia. You can read our blogs. You can like our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to our iTunes podcast. You can download our free War Room Sports mobile app. And you can watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. So make sure you do all that while you're on the site. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. You can sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, make sure you click follow. That way you'll get updates and reminders about the show every week. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. As you see, we've already started doing that. But if you want to call in and speak to us directly, dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. We'll try to get to you and see what's up with you. All right, so let's get into some hot topics real quick. Before we get Fred Perdue from Heavy in the Games on to talk a little college football, hot topics. Jimmy, hot topics are brought to you by...
Yo, Audible. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, try audiobooks. Kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. Visit audibletrial.com/warroomsports. Listen, Audible is the greatest thing ever. It keeps me well-read or listened to, however you want to define it. This week, what I'm listening to this week, because my books change every week, I'm listening to Murderville 3. You know, it's the third part of a series, and it's a lot of, like, you know, sex, lies, and videotapes. Also, I'm listening to The Power of Habit. That's my nonfiction, The Power of Habit. So, at any rate, and also a new Malcolm Gladwell came out, too, that's on Audible. But if you go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports, you can try any of those books or many other books for free. Why not get it for free? Who doesn't like something free? But, Dev, what's going on the hot topic?
I'm still on that ESPN book because I only... Only get into it when I'm on flights. So, you know, I'm reading it like 2 hours every other week, every 3 weeks, you know.
Yo,
so it's
going to
take me like
years.
It's going to take me like a year and a half to fit in. The book is huge, so it's a lot of pages. All right, so we all know the MLB postseason is going on. We got the Red Sox and Tigers locked up at 2 apiece. Kind of look like the Red Sox were going to take control of that series until the Tigers... they did some work last night after Leland did some change-ups in the lineup. Looks like it worked, so we'll see how that continues to go. The Cardinals lead the Dodgers 3-2. But with who the Dodgers have left to pitch, Kershaw definitely one of them, a lot of people look, even though they're down 3-2, think that the Dodgers may be in the driver's seat. You think, Jimmy, it was
amazing.
A situation – where the Cardinals probably needed to finish them off in game
four? Yeah, I'm not saying the Dodgers are the favorite. I don't know if people call them actually the favorite. I'd rather have a 3-2 lead, even though you are facing the best pitchers. But it would have been ideal for them to close this out. I just want to say one thing. I'm not going to sit here and pretend as if I watch baseball all season long. I'm a huge Phillies fan, and I used to watch baseball all season long, but it started getting boring and slow. And anyway... But watching postseason baseball is just something
like
completely
it.
Different. Postseason baseball is like the game slows down. There's more of a chess game going on. So I just want to, you know, every season I say this on
it
the
is,
show.
It is amazing.
And to your point, Jimmy, and to your point, like this postseason so far, there's been like 4 1-0 games. Like the average baseball fan would think, like, what's exciting about that? But that chess game that you talked about,
that chess game,
you know, it
goes,
seems like, you know, once the postseason starts, you know, it's
yo,
just,
I'm going to keep it 100,000 because one of the great things about the NFL is the fact that there is only 16 games, although they had it their way, they would make it like 25 and give everybody CTE. But the thing is, every game counts, so – and that's what changes in baseball. Like, I've been to Phillies games where you're 20 games in and of a 3-game series, and you're like, okay, so what? We lost. Who cares? You know, it's like 600 games left. But when you get into the postseason and every game matters, That's when baseball is at its best. It's a beautiful game. I just want to say that.
Yeah, and it's definitely a tense situation when you actually have a rooting interest.
I'd be tense, and I have no rooting interest, and I'm in the crib tense, like, oh, my God.
Those 4 years or so where the Phillies, you know, were really deep in it.
Oh, man.
I couldn't take that. Then the, you know, the whole 2008, when it finally happened. Man, until that final pitch in 2008, I was bitching the whole time.
Until we were at the parade, I was bitching. I was waiting for him to take it back.
You were waiting for
him to say, until me and Dev got to the parade, I didn't believe it. I was like, yo, that didn't really happen. This didn't happen, yo. I was waiting for him to call it back. I'm going to come back and play another game.
All right, well, look, two quick things in the NBA before we get to Fred. ESPN, you know, for the last 3 years, they've been doing their player rankings as the season was about to start. And, you know, a big conversation that was had on our page yesterday surrounded Kobe Bryant because ESPN has him ranked as the 25th best NBA player right now going into the season. What do you guys think about that? We know there's some circumstances surrounding Kobe that, you know, probably prompted them to do that, but do you guys think 25 is too low? Do you think it's generous?
I've heard some
people say it's actually generous. What do you guys think about Kobe's number 25?
Well, here I'm a Lakers fan, but I try to be objective. And in doing that, I don't think there's 25 players right now that I would take with him even coming off injury for this upcoming season. If they're talking about a player to move forward with, okay, I could see that. He's on the other side of his career. It's just – it's Kobe, the hatred of Kobe is just something else. I've never seen anything like it other than probably Barry Bonds, considering both of them were great players. But there's reasons why Barry Bonds are hated. There are reasons why Kobe is hated. But
Barry Bonds gets protected by a certain group. Kobe doesn't. It's worse for him.
Yeah, he does. But you know what? There are Kobe fans out there. There are Kobe sickle fans that will say he's better than Mike. He's better than, yo, Kobe invented the game. So he has those too. But I just never – I mean, those are the only two guys I've seen hated as much who are productive players in their sport. But in terms of 25 players, I don't know. I wouldn't put him in my top five at this point. I didn't have him in my top five last year, and he still put up amazing numbers. I actually feel sorry for Kobe because I look at our Lakers roster, yo, and this is worse than the Smush days.
The funny thing, like you said, Jim, like either way people go is going to be a huge conversation. The whole Kobe Bryant thing, when we posted this about three players on the page yesterday to see if anybody thought they were too low. It was Kobe Bryant, Dirk Nowitzki, and Zach Randolph. Dirk got about six comments, Zach got about five comments, and Kobe got about 80 comments. And,
Kobe
a lot
had
of
five
them,
comments in 2 seconds.
A lot of them were negative. And I hear what B. Austin is saying about being disrespectful, because I think I understand all the points that people that think it's right. I understand the points they're making. He's coming off an Achilles injury. He's about to be in his 18th season. He's 35 years old. All of that. I understand that. But at the same time, this is a guy that we've watched play through certain injuries and after recovering from certain injuries throughout his whole career. I know he is older, but he's the type of guy that I think I might want to give the benefit of the doubt until he actually proves that he's on the decline. Because it's not like in his 17th year, besides maybe on the defensive side, and I think that's more out of not wanting to play defense at certain points, not that he can't. So I think the only place he has declined a little bit, maybe on the defensive side, and so I don't really see how, like, the decline word, it just doesn't sit well with me, because he averaged 27.5 points a game or something like that last year. So until this man shows you that he really is on the decline, like, why is that being used, besides the injury, as the biggest point that people are making to why 25 is a legitimate ranking for Kobe Bryant? I don't get that. I don't get it.
Kobe is the first. Go ahead, Jim.
I was going to ask you, do you know where Dirk and Zach were ranked? And we had a question in the chat room. Where were they actually ranked?
Dirk was 26, and Zach Randolph was 35. So, you know, the way we worded 35. The question is like, can you 35? Name 24 players better than Kobe Bryant? Can you name 34 players better than Zach Randolph? Can you name 25 players better than Dirk Nowitzki? And, yeah, you know,
they're tripping.
But the thing is, people were saying hell no and all that for Z-Bo, but, you know, people were like, yeah, Kobe, yeah, I think that's generous. So certain
Yo,
people actually
I wanted to address this because I think Kobe is a bit of an anomaly. He's played across looking at – he's going into his 18th season, right, or is it his 17th?
It's the same going into. Once you get past 15, it don't mean
it all. Yeah, you're right. He's played across what really would be a generation. He's the first guy that is going into major mega icon that is in the Twitter generation. And we see everything. We hear everything. Kobe was never had the personality that is really marketable. He is obsessed with. He is obsessed with being great. He's obsessed with competition. And he's not someone that the average fan can really warm up to. Combine that with some of the things he's done off the court, and you have a superstar that's not really lovable and cuddly. Now, we know that about Michael Jordan. We know that now. Post-career.
You just described Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was so intent on winning
himself
with
during Mike's career, I'll give you this. During his career, he was marketed in a way we didn't really know who Michael Jordan was. We knew Hoop Dream. We knew, you know, Michael Jordan and Buck Bunny.
Nike sodas. You're right.
That's the case with Kobe. We kind of knew and saw who he was because of where media was going, and people can't relate to the dude. They can't relate, so they utilize their personal feelings to judge and gauge his career, and they discount how really great this guy is. And it's so unfair. To me, it's unfair not just to Kobe, it's unfair to the game. Because if you love the game of basketball, then you're really disrespecting the game of basketball to slight Kobe Bryant.
And
that's the way that
right.
I look
that,
at
that,
it.
That is a great point. You know why?
Because I'm not
really
a Kobe fan, but I woke up in 2006.
No, used to be on that team.
You used to be on the other side, but the point you made, what I say is a great point, is it's like we all have our favorite players. We all have our favorite teams. But there are some guys that even if you hate them, you have to, like, tip your hat because they're just that good. Like, if you love the game the way we love the game, like, even with LeBron, like, you know, you could say people have called us LeBron haters, although I never thought we would hate LeBron. But he's so good. There's some guys that are so good that you have to give them respect even if you don't like them. You know what I mean? Like, even if you don't like them. I hated Larry Bird as a kid. I couldn't stand Larry Bird. I might have sucker punched him in
the heart. I mean, they don't hate LeBron. LeBron is just
out there. There's guys out there, Jimmy, who's still trying to hold on like LeBron is the best player in the game.
I'm saying those guys aren't true basketball fans. You can't be a basketball fan and not respect a guy. You don't have to like him, but respect his game. People have disrespected Kobe's game based upon their personal feelings towards him. It's the same thing with Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds, like I said, wanted to win so bad he shot himself with a horse tranquilizer. But he was probably the best player that I've seen play. And this is probably even before he started shooting up. But he never warmed up to people. But you add social media on top of that, because Kobe suffers from success too, man. Because I think that if Twitter was around during Mike, he would have had the same hate. Because when you get to be so successful, people start hating on
you. You would have seen the personality. You
know what they did though? They kept Mike away from the public. Like he got so big, he was kind of on some Michael Jackson stuff. They weren't gonna have Mike walking through the mall. You know, the closest you could get to him was in Barcelona in 92 when, you know, maybe they would walk
this
through
is true, but you
the
know
hotel
what,
lobby or something like that. But they wanted to keep people away from Mike because anybody who where Mike was their hero and they met Mike, oh, my God, they were in for a rude awakening.
Dog, I got to check about that.
Get out of my face.
Here's the thing, though, right? And I've seen, you know, shout to DJ Khaled, man, because people suffer from success. I've seen it even with Joe Flacco, right? Coming into the playoffs, he's the underdog, this, that, and the third. Soon as they won, people turned on him immediately. People don't like it when you're so successful. Like, they root for the underdog, but once that underdog becomes champion, it's like FOH. You know what I'm saying? So
they're hating on his check. hating on his body.
Hate on everything about him. He got paid. He's a bum. You were the same guys like rooting for him, you know, when he wasn't supposed to win. Soon as he wins, I mean, people suffer from success. That's part of it. People just automatically flip the switch on you. And I just think that, you know, you have to give Kobe his credit in the grand scheme of things. Now, is it 25 players? No. I don't think he's a – I still will put him top 10, not top 5 at all.
I think the league yeah, I think the league is very top-heavy as far as talent is concerned. And even coming off an Achilles injury, because like you guys said, he's so obsessed. So he's a guy, you know what I'm saying, I'm not going to count him out because of an injury. As a matter of fact, I said this to somebody the other day. Kobe is so obsessed. I think Kobe will mess around and push himself so hard that he re-injures himself before he allows himself to play like the 25th best player in the league. I really feel that. So, you know, even coming off the injury, I can't name 24 people in this league better than Kobe Bryant. I don't know if I can name 25 people in this league better than Dirk, and I don't know if I can name 34 people better than Zach Randolph.
No, it definitely isn't. It definitely isn't. We got Purdue coming on. I want to talk to Mr.
Yeah.
Purdue about his comment about Zach Randolph. Anyway,
so real quick, we're going to Fred right now, but just talking about great players, we mentioned a little bit earlier, Bill Russell is going to get a statue unveiled on opening night in Boston. That's kind of been a long time coming. Now, we talked about it earlier, how everybody thinks that every good player deserves a statue, but Bill Russell is somebody who kind of transcended the game with what he did, what he had to go through, and the success that he had while going through all of that. So, you know, if somebody deserves one, it's definitely Bill Russell. So shout out to him
Bill Russell.
And the Celtics doing the right thing. And
I have a dream speech.
All right, let's go to the college football expert from Heavy in the Games, Jim. Let's get Fred on the line real quick.
Let's see what's going on with Mr. Purdue. Hey, Fred,
what's going on, guys?
What's going on, man?
Before we even get into college football, I got to ask you a question, man. Because you made a comment on Facebook. I didn't comment on it, but I said, "What is it?" in reference to Zach Randolph, you said Zach Randolph can't go left. I read that, and I said, hold on. Zach Randolph is left-handed, though.
He can't go somewhere.
That was honest mistake.
he can't go right. I guess he's just used to everybody being right-handed. Maybe he couldn't go right. I don't know.
But
Fred, Trey, this is Dev, man. Because I was down in Fred's neck of the woods this past weekend, and I hit you a couple of times, but, man, after that game, That Tampa weather, man, it just took everything out of us, man. We couldn't go anywhere, man.
It's a beast, man. I understand.
We sat in the hotel. I couldn't move, man. So I'm going to definitely get with you the next time I'm down in that area. I'm going to get with you.
Fred, now, I told you, you have completely converted me to a college football guy. I'm not even going to lie. I've watched more college football this year than the rest of my life combined. So first off, I want to thank you for that. I have five games that I want to ask you about, and we can briefly go through them because we are running late. But the first one being Miami and North Carolina.
Well, I'm going to be very objective here. I'm going to try as hard as I can. I am the resident Miami Hurricanes fan. So throwing all of that out the window, I'm a little worried about Miami tonight. Miami has had 8 turnovers in the last 2 games. That might just bite them in the butt tonight. North Carolina always gives Miami very good games, and usually when Miami goes on the road to North Carolina, they tend to trip up. So right now, offensively, this team hasn't really played really well, up to expectations at least. Defensively, this team, they adjust really well, at least going into the half. The last game they played against Georgia Tech 2 weeks ago, really they saw a lot of things they weren't used to seeing, and Al Golden and that coaching staff got them back up to be – they adjusted at the half. Georgia Tech brought out some things that they hadn't seen early on, and they adjusted really well, and they only averaged about 3 yards a carry after that. So that is one thing I will give them. Stephen Morris had an ankle injury. He's had 12 days to heal up from that. But this Miami offense hasn't looked really great. Alan Hearns, the guy that at one point was the number one receiver on this team, had gotten pushed down the depth charts, has risen back. And I think he's going to be the go-to guy with no tight end that's really dominant for this team. And if Duke Johnson can't get going and they won't commit to the run game, Miami might be in trouble.
Okay, another game real fast. Let me ask you about Washington at Arizona State.
Okay, Arizona State, this team, and they have a really good quarterback in Taylor Kelly. Taylor Kelly has a very innate sense to scramble out of the pocket when he has to, but he tends to hold on to the ball a little longer than I like. This offense is really very high tempo, and you also have Washington just coming off of a big game against Oregon. When you have games like that, you tend to get – it's an emotionally draining game. So I want to see how Washington really handles going into this game, because when you go into it against an Oregon where they just run you up and down the field and they basically blow you out, how up are you to go up against an offense that is very similar?
Okay. Next one, UCLA at Stanford.
Stanford has gotten the benefit of going up against teams that have played UCLA the following week. Well, they have UCLA this week, and this is a very interesting matchup. You have Jim Mora Jr. Coming in, coaching this UCLA team, and you have David Shaw, the next big name to go to the NFL. This is going to be a big-time chess match. You have two really good NFL-ready quarterbacks in Brett Hundley and Kevin Hogan. Kevin Hogan for Stanford might be just a notch below Andrew Luck's level going in. Stanford, they're a hit-you-in-the-mouth type of team. They like to run the football. They'll throw it deep a little. They're known for their tight ends, but mainly their tight ends haven't really made a big impact lately due to losing them a lot. Barry Sanders Jr., a guy at running back that he doesn't get a lot of touches, but when he does, he's very electric.
I've seen Hogan play, and I was definitely impressed with him, and I see what you mean. I don't know where Stanford finds these guys. Stanford stays with a good quarterback.
Well, Stanford has enough. They actually just signed the number one high school prospect quarterback in the country, so they're not getting any worse anytime soon.
Yeah, they like, man, all right. How about USC at Notre Dame?
USC at Notre Dame is just right now, I really am disappointed in both teams. USC obviously firing Lane Kiffin. It was time. Ed Orgeron, really a guy that's a great recruiter. I don't see him staying there afterwards as the head coach. I think USC will, unless he wins a lot of games and just forces USC's hand, those players are ready to run through a wall for him. But really and truly, Notre Dame, if they can get it together offensively, Tommy Reese doesn't really fit the offense that Brian Kelly wants to run. And defensively, this team has taken a big step back from last year. Last year, Notre Dame should have lost about three, maybe four games. And now you're seeing what happens when you lose your quarterback, lose your defensive leader on defense and Manti Te'o, lose a couple guys on defense, as well as you lose your safety blanket in Tyler Eifert. This team, they can't really run the ball really well. DeVaris Daniels looks really good for Notre Dame. And Marquise Lee for USC, their stud wide receiver, at one point was the number one wide receiver going in on many draft boards. But right now, after a lot of injuries, I'm having to reevaluate that. Sammy Watkins has impressed me a lot, and he might move up above him. But Marquise Lee is probably the most explosive receiver I've seen since A.J. Green. He's a shorter version of A.J. Green.
Wow. Now, here's a game I'm excited about. I'm fired up, and I really want to ask you about this because two top five teams, and they're not even in the SEC, believe it or not. FSU at Clemson. Florida State at Clemson. What's your take on this game?
This is a game of varying strengths. Florida State, obviously, they have quarterback Jameis Winston. Clemson, they have quarterback Taj Boyd. They both have very good defenses. Florida State doesn't stop the run really, really well. Clemson doesn't stop the pass really well, and neither does either very well. Jameis Winston hasn't really gone up against a really good defense in a hostile environment. We'll really know what he's really like going into this game. Taj Boyd, a senior now, he was highly recruited out of high school. Really a calm guy, runs the offense very well. Chad Morris, the highest paid offensive coordinator in the country. He could be up for any head coaching job at any point. Has really brought this offense to to a peak after losing wide receiver Sherron Peake, who is a former number one high school prospect. You also don't have a really great run game. But ultimately, I think Florida State is going to win this game, and I'm putting that out there. Florida Ooh. State, if they can commit to the run game, you have James Wilder Jr., you have Jameis Winston, you have Devonta Freeman, and you have a defense that can stop the pass if they just stop going into Florida State really mainly they go away from what works. When man defense works, they go to zone. And they switch to this 3-4 defense where they're playing with undersized linemen. And, yes, you have Timmy Jernigan. You have Christian Jones. You have LaMarcus Joyner. You have a bunch of guys in that secondary as well as up front. But when they're having to make tackles 10 and 15 yards down the field because of big runs, they've allowed 150 yards against Boston College. Boston College wow. kept that game close. Pitt, wow. in the first game of the season, they actually were running the ball pretty well and went away from it. So I really want to see if a team can run on Florida State. Don't shorten the game. Play with them. But do what you
Let need. Me ask you a question about Jameis Winston. What class is he? Because is he a freshman?
He is a redshirt freshman.
A lot of folks
are touting him as a freshman, but they don't say he's had a year to sit behind a number 8 overall pick.
That's what I thought, because I'm like this guy can't be people have done that. That's why I ask you.
Yes.
Because a lot of the marketing, he's a freshman. I'm like, wasn't he a redshirt?
Yes, he's a redshirt freshman, and I've been saying that forever. Just like Johnny Manziel, he's had a year to sit and watch a NFL first-round pick. So you've had a chance to sit and learn from that quarterback, learn from that head coach that, by the way, Jimbo Fisher is the quarterback's coach at Florida State. So you've already spent multiple hours with him all the time. So he should be doing this against a lot of these bad teams. Maryland, I really thought they were going to put up a bigger fight against Florida State. But when you lose 63-0, it really makes me wonder. But Florida State really is going to have to deal with a very hostile environment, and I want to see if Jameis Winston can handle a pretty decent pass rush led by Vic Beasley, a guy that has risen up draft boards as well.
Yeah, so what do you think, last question I have for you, what do you think about Jameis Winston long-term in terms of being a pro?
Being a pro, he has everything you want. He has the height, he has the speed, he has the arm. I just really, right now, I'm not totally sold, simply put. I haven't seen him against a very good defense in a hostile environment. I'll be sold if he can handle his own, even in a losing effort. If he can hold his own and keep it together in a hostile environment, I'm sold. Everything else is there. He has everything that you want in a number one overall pick type of quarterback, which he can come out next year.
He's going to come back next year anyway. I never asked you, what about Boyd? What is your opinion of Boyd as a pro?
Personally, I'm not really sold on the shorter quarterbacks. He's about 6 foot, not a great arm, runs a spread offense. Say that again?
Tell that to Drew Brees and Russell Wilson.
Here's the thing about Drew Brees, and I'm glad you brought that up. How many Drew Breeses and Russell Wilsons are there?
Those two.
You have two outliers. Had so many shorter quarterbacks. You had Michael Vick, 6 foot, 5'11", 6 foot. You've had Doug Flutie's. You've had even going into this year's NFL draft, you have an Aaron Murray at Georgia. Aaron Murray doesn't have the arm strength to play in an NFL game and be a legitimate starter. He's a good college quarterback, but ultimately he just doesn't have it. And when you have it as far as arm strength, intangibles, football IQ, and you have it upstairs, that's the combination. And that's what Russell Wilson and Drew Brees have. Oh, by the way, Drew Brees has Sean Payton, too, so that helps as well.
I mean, absolutely, they're a team, but, it is what it is. You're right about that overall there's not too many of the short guys, but I just think that the way the game is played now is not played the way it used to be played, where the bigger quarterbacks would stand in the pocket, and everything's getting outside the pocket now, making these plays. So we'll see what happens, though, but that's the game I'm most looking forward to. It should be a good game, and it's just exciting to see two non-SEC teams in the top five play each other. But anyway, thanks for chiming in with us again with the college football talk. I know you're at heavyinthegames.com. Tell our listeners how they can read your work, you know, and see what you're doing in terms of college football as well as professional football.
Well, you can reach me at heavyinthegames.com. Always have the latest in college football, the NFL as well. Going to be doing some different things, kind of reorganizing some things, as well as you can visit me on Twitter. I'm always live tweeting. I'll be on Twitter heavy tonight, especially talking Miami Hurricanes, North Carolina Tar Heels for Thursday night, as well as that other NFL game. I don't really that other NFL game, the Seahawks and that other game.
I do not like Thursday games at all.
Hey, if
yeah,
I'm
about
like,
to talk about that.
I really have to say, and I want to put this out there, can we just put teams like the Browns and the Cardinals, we can put those guys on Thursday Night Football.
So I don't have to watch them.
At least I don't have to watch them. They don't take up my early games on Sunday. I can take that.
There you go. That's a good idea. Anyway, Fred, man, thanks for calling in. We look forward to hearing from you next week with the college games. And, you know, I'll probably talk to you on Twitter during that Florida State Clemson.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, take
all
it
right,
easy.
Fred. Peace.
All right.
All right. That's Fred Perdue, everybody. Heavy in the games. That's our college expert. I've noticed the change as well, Jimmy. Like, you like college football. You converting on us. Like,
yo, because you know what? Just watching, it's some great games. And the NFL is starting to get like the NBA, where you may have, like, you know, two great games the entire weekend. And besides, I have this thing where I hate fantasy football at this point. I'm like anti-fantasy football. Used to be a junkie. So I just try not to watch it. But college games have been very good this year, man. I can't even lie to you. It's just very exciting once you start to watch it and get into it. Like, the passion the pros have is just different than the pros. But anyway,
let's wrap up about the NFL. Check out our website, worldroomsports.com. Like we told you before, to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics, dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline, 323-410-0012. Just press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk.
Holla! Absolutely. Let's talk about the NFL. The NFL Wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows. You can listen from your computer, from your iPhone, from your Android phone. You can also listen from a BlackBerry or even a Palm phone. If you have a BlackBerry or a Palm phone, kill yourself. But before you do, make sure and listen to The War Room. Go to Stitcher.com.
Can you listen from your Inspector Gadget watch that's coming out for Samsung?
Yeah, well, you know, that's not a phone. That's not a phone, though, so you really can listen from that. That's what it says, you know. But anyway, go to Stitcher.com/The War Room. That's one word, Thewarroom. When asked for the coupon code, don't forget The War Room. Because when you put our coupon code in, it'll put you in a contest where you can win millions and millions of money. With that being said, let's talk football, gentlemen.
Let's talk some football.
Now, there were rumors going around.
What rumors?
They get excited. Rumors of adding another Thursday game. I just talked about my disdain for the current Thursday game, and they want to add a second one to have a doubleheader. How do you gentlemen feel about this?
Man, another money grab.
Too much competition for it to work. Too much comp for it to work.
Actually, the NFL denied these reports that are coming out. They were saying, you know, they were trying to make it a doubleheader on Thursday night, not necessarily on NFL Network. So basically, they were probably going to, and I'm not going to say they were, because they, like you said, they're probably lying. But what the reports were saying is that, you know, they may bid it out to other networks so they can get even more money from another network trying to jump in to the Thursday night game. They said that it was even a possibility that it can go somewhere on the internet, an internet site, or maybe Netflix or something of that nature. But like Jimmy was saying, like, I think the Thursday night game now, like, I haven't seen too many good Thursday night games, and I attribute that to players just not – football is just not the kind of game that you can play on 3 or 4 days rest. You need to recuperate for a week. It's a reason why football is played once a week. And I think, you know, that's why the Thursday night game always suffers and it seems kind of sloppily played. So to add two of them – I'm not with that. But there's a lot of good network. Thursday is a good night for network TV.
I mean, well, you know, you're not going to get the Sally Hemings lovers because Scandal comes on Thursday night. But here's my thing, right? it's one of those things where I know I watch sports a little different than everybody else, but I actually enjoy certain commentators more than others, and I like Mike Mayock. He has a lot of information, but I think that somebody else needed to be put in the booth with him because the games are boring and the commentators make it even more boring. They put you to sleep. They're just not entertaining at all. Like, for all the trash we talk about John Gruden because he gives blumpkins to every quarterback that's on Monday night.
He's still entertaining. That's not entertaining to me. It may be entertaining to a certain – there is a certain segment of the population
that's what I'm saying.
So, Dad, I mean, I can understand why.
But B. Austin, at least we listen so we can clown him. Like, I see what he's saying. Like, Mike Mayock is very knowledgeable about the game. But, you know, his way of speaking and you know, he just doesn't have –
I think a certain voice is needed. Now, if you want to add another game, I don't know who they can put in the booth because –
Here's the reality is Monday Night Football does an average of 10 million tune-ins. Sunday Night Football does something like 8.7, close to 9. And Thursday Night Football does a little under 7 million tune-ins, and that's because it's traditionally, as you say, great network TV. That's can't miss Thursday or whatever that term that NBC came up
Cosby
with.
Show,
so
the Cosby Show.
Exactly. You're competing with so much. I think the NFL is overdoing it, and I think they should. I think they should scrap it altogether, unless it's a special game. Do 1, 2, 3 games a season on Thursday night, like back.
The Thanksgiving game is still cool. We had a late game on Thanksgiving, so you had the 2 early games. Like you have the first game before you eat. You're watching the second game while you're eating, then you get that little break, you know, dessert time. You're rocking the 8 o'clock game. But the every week thing, even with one, I don't really like it. Now, there's a lot of fans that say they like it, you know, because of their schedule. It's the best thing for them. Or it's just a lot of people out there, like, I don't care when it is.
They're getting subpar football.
Right. That's exactly my point. Like, they're getting football and they're fanatics, but they're not realizing that they're getting – like you said, subpar football. I really haven't seen too many Thursday night games where they were played at a high level. Now, I'm not the type of person who needs explosive scoring every week. I like defense. But at the same time, you can still tell, scoring or no scoring, when a game is being played in a very sloppy manner. And that's what I've seen on Thursday.
That high scoring could be because of subpar defense. So you're missing what you really want to see.
Then the Browns put up like 37 on.
That means you're just watching
football. They can't score 37 in practice.
No, seriously,
that means you're just watching football for the sake of watching football, and I'm just not there. I understand that people like that because I used to be that way, but where I am now, I can't watch it for the sake of watching. I mean, that's like, all right, you know what that's like? That's like watching a porn.
Well, where are
you
now?
You got two handicapped grandparents. Like, no one wants to see that. Yes, it's still porn, but it's disgusting. So this is still football, but it's disgusting. No one wants to see this. So just cut it out, NFL. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing, like, they're trying to do more Thursday. They're trying to do more London games. Shoot, the Steelers-Minnesota game is the best London game I've seen before. Those games are usually trash. So, it's like, come on.
Unbelievable.
They're doing too much.
Speaking of trash, you see who's coming on Monday night this week?
He says, speaking of trash.
You see the Monday night game this week?
Yeah.
Yo, it's like Giants and Vikings, yo.
Yeah. I'm going to be sad. Talk about sloppy, mistake-prone football. That's what the Giants have been playing lately. Well, at least we get our first look at Freeman as a Viking.
AP might have 2 more babies by Monday. Anyway, Let's talk about some wicked time. Or as my man Wes Manchild, shout to him. He calls him Brady Montana. So as Tom Brady, if anybody didn't see it, had a crazy game where he came back and his team won against the New Orleans Saints. It was just amazing, man. Like Brady does it again. He's cool under pressure.
It sure was.
Now listen to this, because this is where football. This is what Jimmy and I talk about. This is where the disconnect happens. I'm watching that game with somebody who has Tom Brady on their fantasy team. So they're cursing the whole time. They're not impressed with anything. You know what I'm saying? And even after he's Tom Brady and he throws the winning touchdown to a bunch of receivers who's dropped everything plus their wallet for 60 minutes, he's still not impressed because that's my fantasy quarterback and he only gave me like 15 points. F him. Like he just did
that's
one of the most amazing things you will see
football.
For the rest of the season. Fantasy
football
such exactly because you can have somebody do something heroic but don't put up a bunch of points, and then you can have somebody bunch of points while stinking up the joint. Like Eli. Eli will
shout
throw
out
like
to Tony
three
Romo.
Picks, but he'll throw like four touchdowns to offset the three picks with a bunch of yards because they were down 30 and he had to keep throwing. He's a fantasy hero for the week, but his team is 0-6 and he's playing like trash truck juice. It's the same thing with like RG3.
So
like
is War Room Sports, am I hearing?
I'm saying same thing with like RG3. Like the Skins have been down so much this year, they have to keep passing. So as bad as he's playing for the real life fans, like his fantasy fans were actually okay with him until like this last week because they were always playing from behind. He always had to throw the ball. He always had some late touchdowns. They didn't mean nothing to the Redskins, but meant everything to fantasy owners. It's destroying the way we watch
football.
You know.
You want your fantasy quarterback to be down going into, you know, the
exactly.
second half of the game so that you
pick
can see you're not concerned about whether he's winning. You want
pick
him down
quarterback
so
on
he
a
can put
bum
up.
Team.
Yo, the disconnect
yeah,
is so
put up,
crazy.
He can put up the stats. So if I'm hearing you guys correctly, you guys are definitely anti fantasy, although you still play it because of your competitive greed.
Yo, it's not even that,
Brady
yo. I've been playing fantasy at this point, yo, over 15 years, but my opinion of fantasy, when I first got into fantasy, it was amazing. Like, this was the 90s.
Jimmy
dude.
Was playing
it wasn't
fantasy
computers,
football
yo.
When dudes
him.
Were scoring the games themselves. Like, you didn't know right away when you were winning or losing.
Yo,
like, Jimmy
what
played
how crazy is that?
When you drafted at a bar out of necessity.
When they had leather
you know,
helmets.
And people
yo,
still do that
though.
Because it's fun, but they had to
it's
do it
fun,
because
yeah.
it wasn't on computer.
We had no computer. When people made drop moves and they picked up a player, we literally had a time frame on Sunday morning where they would call your house. I would put up him, and you had to write it down in case somebody else called with a lower seating. That's how we did it. But anyway, but it's to the point now where I'm getting worn out and tired of it because I had a guy call me this week because you know, I'm a Broncos fan, so he wanted to talk trash. He's like, man, Peyton Manning, man, he stunk it up this week. I'm like, no, he didn't. He only gave me 2 touchdowns. I was like, what?
Like, come on.
I'm used to 5 and 6.
Yo, cuz.
Like, come on, man.
Brady. But back to Brady, and Brady does it again. Now, from a statistical standpoint, he's not having a Brady-esque season. But having watched 3 Patriot games, the question could be posed, could this be his best season ever? Yes, because he's playing with B. Austin, Jimmy Williams, and T.J. at wide receiver, and these cats drop the ball
all game long.
Yo, they drop the ball all game long, and the thing that makes Brady, the one thing I got to give Brady, yo, Brady can throw a deep ball and an intermediate pass like no one else. His accuracy on a deep ball, he can hit a quarter at 700 yards with his left hand. Like, he's so accurate. And he hits these dudes in the hands, and it's like I think sometimes they don't believe the ball is coming because they're like in their mind, well, I ran a poor route because I'm not a good route runner, so I'm not open, so he's not throwing me the ball. Oh, the ball's in the air. I can't get it because I'm covered. And then it hits them in the hands, and they just drop it. Like,
yo,
he is – if they win with this squad, it is a great season for him.
Yeah, I have no clue how they're 5-1, but I want to say something to that. Like, I know Def has a Sunday ticket as I do, and I watch a lot of these games. I have never seen more drop passes throughout the entire league as I'm seeing now. And I wonder whether that's the reflection of the talent or the fact that there is no such thing as a run game anymore. People pass every down, so now you see more.
Both.
I mean,
both.
I don't
know. No,
no,
it's both.
Yeah, it's both. It might actually be
both. It's a combination of both.
But it has to be a little bit with the talent because, first of all, these guys, now I don't know how many people out there listening to us.
A lot of them aren't wide receivers.
Played football, but the wide receiver gloves in football is basically cheating compared to what the guys, you know, what the pioneers had to go through. Like receivers back in the day when they just had to do everything with their bare hands. The stick factor in these gloves is basically cheating. You know what I'm saying? If
you
can't
you
go out most of the time and make a one-hand catch. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You just put your hand out, and a lot of times it just sticks to your hand. These gloves are crazy sticky. So when you drop passes, you know, with that on, you have to look at that. But Jimmy does make a good point. Like, the more you do something, the more the odds are that you're going to fail at it a little bit. And, you know, talking as a fan, you know, it's so easy for us to always criticize, but put yourself in that situation. It's probably a really, really difficult thing to be running that fast, for the game to be moving that fast, and then a rock coming at you at like 40 miles an hour. Like, we complain every time somebody drops something, but their jobs are really hard. You know,
with somebody trying to kill you,
but they get a lot of money.
They get a whole lot of money. Jimmy, it's definitely both.
It's definitely three teams.
The value of the running back position is dropping by the moment. It's dropping by the number of Adrian Peterson kids that come out. Like, every time a kid comes out, the value of a running back drops. So you have guys like, God bless him. God bless him. I love him. But he's not the picturesque of a talented running back. You got guys like Danny Woodhead. Like, the Chargers are going to war with Danny Woodhead as their starting running back.
But you know why?
Come on. Like, that's
because
value.
He can catch.
Right. So he's not – he might run the ball 12 times in a game and then go out and catch 7, 8, 9 passes. Same
running
thing with Darren Sproles. By the same token,
mm-hmm.
They're taking guys with great athletic measurables and size and putting them at the wide receiver position. They can't run routes. They haven't really worked on developing their hands. And so now you got a guy who's 6'3", 215, who can't really route, and his hands are okay, but if he worked on them like an old-school wide receiver, they'd be much better. I'll give you case in point, and I think he's going to be a great player. Julio Jones cannot run a route better than me. He doesn't have to.
He's a freak.
I have a better one. Yo, Darius Hayward Bay would be the best receiver in the entire league.
He can't play football.
He does everything else well except catch. And the problem is he plays wide receiver. He's a great route runner. He's fast as hell. He can't catch to save his life. He does everything well but catch. He just happens to play wide receiver. There's three teams that I watch every week, and I'm just amazed at the amount of drops. One is the Carolina Panthers. Cam Newton struggles, and he don't need help struggling, but these dudes, and including Steve Smith, having a terrible season. Yo, they drop every three. He can put it on their hands, and of course he has a cannon for an arm, so he's throwing 100 miles an hour. But
Steve Smith dropped a touchdown pass last.
Yo, Steve Smith dropped a touchdown. He threw between the two numbers. Like, they have tons of drops. Brady's another one. And the other one is, I'm shocked at this, but the Packers have so many. It started with JerMichael Finley, who drops everything.
Yo,
he's always
hate him.
JerMichael and James Jones always had the drops, though.
I didn't realize that they missed Greg Jennings the way, because Greg Jennings didn't drop this stuff. Yo, these guys drop everything. Greg Jennings just happened to play for a team now where they can't pass, so. But I'm just shocked at the amount of drops. If you watch those three teams play, you'll see at least 20 drops on the course of a Sunday.
Hey, but if you go back to what
y'all think,
saying,
y'all think JerMichael Finley can play football? Like, yo, his drops are ridiculous. I hate him. He doesn't play for my team.
He's a freak. I'm telling you, it's just like basketball. You're going to get more off your athletic talent than what you can like Julius Thomas on Denver. Like, he's not out there dropping passes, but he doesn't have the greatest hands, but he's a freak. Like, you can't guard him, and then you can just throw it up sometimes. And it's
Jimmy Graham is like,
Jimmy Graham freak. And you know why these dudes get shut down? They get shut down when they run into a real corner. Now it's tough in this day and age because real corners are being legislated against. They're being legislated against. But did you see what Aqib Talib did to Jimmy Graham? And it was all because Jimmy can't run a route. Now, he can catch. He can catch, but he can't route to save his life. So you can't leave a guy like Aqib Talib because you ain't got no moves.
Because against Talib, though, just Breeze should have just been throwing that up like he always do. But I want to go back to a point you made about running backs. True, but Jimmy Graham, like 9-12. But I'm going to go back to a point that B. Austin made about the running backs. And I'm going to put another fantasy twist on that. Like, you talked about a Danny Woodhead. Like, look at some of these running backs and then the running back, the pure running back that they're playing on a team with. Like, from a fantasy perspective, Darren Sproles is more valuable than a Pierre Thomas. Danny Woodhead is more valuable than Ryan Matthews. Like, a lot of teams have those
garbage
little guys. Yeah, but still, I mean, Danny Woodhead is taking all his – like, he can catch a pass, but Danny Woodhead can catch a pass better. So, you know, he's kind of making him obsolete in
they're
the offense
fifth,
because nobody's running the ball that well. Yeah, so it's crazy. But back to Brady and the question that B. Austin asked, you know, is this his best season ever? I mean, this is nothing that new to me because I saw Brady win 3 championships with Manny Moe and Jack at receiver. So, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to say this is going to be his best job ever. I mean, I think this one is being highlighted more because this time Manny Moe and Jack are young. You know, he has a bunch of young receivers.
Yeah.
You know, he's dropping – weapons are dropping by the day, offense and defense. And, you know, but still, I'm still going to be a realist here. The season when they went 18-0, Brady was, like, lighting the world on fire. He had weapons.
18-1.
He still had to throw the ball. Yeah. He still had to throw the ball. He had weapons, but he still had to throw the ball. So, to me, that's still his best season, no matter what
the
hell he
does. The way they were running through the league, was like the numbers he put up. Like,
it was disrespectful. So I ain't going to say something is better than that.
Yo, they were beating people, but yo, the average margin was like 25 points. I've never seen nothing like that. Like,
it was like six or seven
MJ
moral victories in the league that year, B. Austin, because the people who didn't get blown out by 20 was like, all right, we kind of stuck with them. That's why everybody talking about the Giants had a moral victory in week 17. They want no moral victory. They lost.
Yo, Jimmy, you know how you say Mike messed up the league because of the athletes that they drafted after him to mimic him or guard him? T.O. and Randy Moss have done that to the wide receiver position.
I agree.
Because these dudes are a whole bunch of T.O. and Randy Moss clones. The difference being T.O. couldn't run a route. And Randy Moss is just something that we've never seen and never will see again.
Yeah, and it's actually trickling down.
Randy Moss is a predator.
Guys like Jacoby Jones shouldn't get that much playing time.
They got 6'3 receivers on every college team now. Like, every college team has a guy.
I'm going to take you back to a play in the game that you don't want to – I'm not going to mention Raheem Moore's name.
Just did.
I saw an interview where Jacoby Jones literally looked in the camera and said, yo, the ball dropped in my hands. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I caught it. I couldn't believe it.
No, he couldn't believe
what are you talking about? You're a wide receiver.
He probably didn't believe that they let him catch it, though. No damn way.
I mean, Tom Brady, man. Me and Dev had a conversation. I was like, yo, because I just have Brady, like, high on my list in terms of not only quarterbacks currently playing, but all-time greats. And a lot of it for me, it's strictly clutch performance because what I see from him that I haven't seen from a lot of quarterbacks, including all-time great quarterbacks who are on my list, is how calm he is. It's like, yo, with enough time, I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to win. And there are a lot of quarterbacks who I have as my top 10, top 5 all time, who I still have a little doubt whether they'll win the game. I have no doubt. And I don't care who he's playing with. Like, dude is so calm. It's kind of just like Joe Montana.
With Brady, it's like, for me, I haven't revised my QB list in a while, but I'm pretty sure once I sit down and do it, he got to be somewhere top 5 dead or alive in no particular order.
Definitely.
One other aspect of that game we have to look at. What the hell was the Saints doing, allowing the Patriots to have three possessions in the final 3 minutes and 29 seconds.
Yeah, that was terrible.
They got the ball back. They got the ball back, and just like Jimmy, like when Brady gets the ball, I believe that you're cooked. You're done. So they got the ball back with 3 minutes, 29 seconds left, and as I went to our Facebook page to type the situation, the time, and do you think Tom Brady will, you know, win this game for him, they had already gone four and out, not three and out. They had already gone four and out by the time I finished typing that. I was like, damn, that was quick. Like, because you're not used to seeing that with Brady. But most of the four and out were drops. So instead of being able to run the ball, well, they could. The problem was
I can tell
they were
you
only up 1 point. They were only up 1 point. So I don't think they were comfortable being conservative and just running the ball. But I think, you know, that's better than throwing the ball and not letting the clock run. So they give him the ball right back. Tom Brady goes deep, throws an interception. They get the ball back again. You're not going to give Tom Brady three chances to beat you within 3 minutes and think you're not going to lose the game. Like, I don't understand what the Saints are doing
I can tell
in that
you
situation.
The two mistakes. I can tell you the two mistakes. One, as you just pointed out, Pierre Thomas did not get the ball. Number two, in order to have an effective defensive stand against Tom Brady, you must pressure him. Be damned the prevent. Be damned the prevent against Tom Brady. It doesn't matter how many defenders you put in coverage. He will find the hole. Pause. Was that really a pause? Not at all.
No, really
and so when I looked at the film, when I looked
any
at
holes
the film,
out there, now I don't wanna... no,
when I looked at the film, I'm like, Rob Ryan, you are Buddy Ryan's son. You know blitzes that none of us know, and you're not pressuring Tom Brady. You're going to sit back there and let him throw. Okay, cool. You gave the game up. You gave the game up. You cannot play prevent against him, Peyton, Rodgers, Breeze. You can't play prevent unless you're giving up. You've decided you're willing to give up the points, and in that situation, you can't. So you've got to bring pressure. It's a gamble, but you got to do it. It's a bigger. It's less of a gamble to blitz on him in that situation than it is just sitting back and trying to play cover.
I mean, at the end of the day,
so,
man, it was the coach's gaffe, but he, you know, showed his excellence. We have another comment on Twitter. This is from Glenn. Shout out to Glenn. He's talking about our conversation about fantasy football. He said he never can get into it because it takes the enjoyment out of the sport and forces you to be a divided fan. He can't be a divided fan. I get that, too.
Amen.
So there's times I've rooted against my team just for fantasy reasons. Because, you know,
that's when you were an addict. That's when before you got
to
the
not no more,
program.
Not no more. I don't care no more. But when I was about that chicken, like, yeah, I would definitely root against my team because it's, you know, for my own bread. But
that was when they had Kyle Orton.
He's exactly right though, man. Because I wrote an article about that. Fantasy makes you into the type of fan that you don't want to be, and a lot of dudes right now don't care. They don't care, but it bothers me, man. It bothers me. That's why I can only do one league, and if I wasn't actually the one running that league year after year, I wouldn't play anymore. It really bothers me.
Yeah, I'm completely, like, next year, like, it's just, we get into that later on. Anyway, let's talk about the Texans fans. Shout out to all my MS-13 people out there. Yo,
coward,
these guys actually cheered when Matt Schaub had an ankle injury. So the question is it fair or foul for the home team to cheer one of their players getting hurt?
That's foul. I mean, because you already know how it's perceived when you cheer when anybody gets hurt. You know, the Eagles cheered when Michael Irvin went down in Philly, and we haven't heard the end of it, and we never will. So all I can say in that is at least they cheered the enemy. At least they cheered somebody who came in there and antagonized them every time he caught a 4-yard pass. You know, getting up with the first down
playmaker
and the talking trash. But I'm not condoning it. But I'm like, at the very least, they did it to one of our arch rivals. You know what I mean? I know Schaub has been playing bad. I know he throws a pick six every two passes. But he's your quarterback. You know what I'm saying? If he goes down, don't say anything. You know what I'm saying? Even if in your mind you're like, yes, you know what I'm saying? Don't say anything because it's classless. You know, nobody will ever get the same kind of reputation as Philly fans because apparently booing Santa Claus, you know, which I didn't know was real, is like the worst thing that you can ever do in life. But, you know, so they won't have to live with this for too long, but I think it was very classless for them to do that, man.
Listen, man.
Who am I to bear class? I ain't got no class.
It definitely was. I mean, not that I think all fans should be classy. They shouldn't stay classy because, you know, it is what it is. You pay your money, you can boo anybody you want to. But at the end of the day, man, like, yo, Texans fans just aren't looking good this entire season with some of their behavior.
Yeah, you're burning jerseys, like, showing up to my man's house. You're booing him. I mean, you're cheering him when he gets hurt. Like, come on.
It's deplorable, yo. It's definitely deplorable, man.
Let's see how happy they are. Because, you know, T.J. Yates came in after that and threw two picks, one of them a pick six from the red zone. So how do you feel now? Now this week, the third-string quarterback, Case Keenum, from the University of Houston, will be starting over T.J. Yates. So, you know,
awesome.
This is what you asked for. Still think Shaw gives you the best chance.
Last year, you was bigging up T.J. Yates, yo. What's up now?
T.J. Yates a bum, yo.
I mean, it was two ill-advised passes, but yo, all I gotta say about this whole situation is barbaric. And shout out to Tango Blast.
Yo, you said two ill-advised passes, like you're still trying to defend that man. That dude went like
he is on the low.
What did he go like 3-7 as the starter? That like he's not good. Or he won 3 out of 7 games as a starter.
We got about 15 minutes left, and it's definitely a topic I want to get you guys' opinion on and also some of our listeners because we have a lot of Eagles fans out in our audience. Mike Vick and Nick Foles is turning into a quarterback controversy, not by the coach, pretty much by everybody else. What do you think? Who should be the starter?
You know what? It is by the coach, though, because coming into the season with the whole this is a quarterback controversy, this is a anybody's job thing up until – the third preseason game, he did make it this way because if he thinks that highly of him and then he comes in relief of Vic and plays this well, then we should be thinking, okay, Chip Kelly knows he's, you know, capable. Now we're seeing that he might be capable. So he started all this.
My answer is based on your exact point. So to make sure we are clear that we are not hypocrites here on the War Room, if it were just based on one game, just this one game, it would be too soon to make a decision. But looking at the history, the fact that Foles has come in relief of Vic in past, to look at what he's done in the preseason and to look at what he's done last year, I think that body of work is enough to say give the young man an opportunity, because at this stage of Mike Vick's career, at 33 years old, I don't think that he's going to gain a better grasp of the game from a cerebral standpoint. I don't think that he's going to be anything other than what he is, and we're not winning. We're not a competitive playoff contender-type team with Mike Vick at the helm, and it's not just Mike Vick's fault. We got plenty of other things to work on, but he's not the difference maker, so give the car keys to Nick Foles and let's see him develop a little bit. That's my thing. Now, the controversy is the stats. The stats are funny because Foles has 6 touchdowns to 0 interceptions and has only played really in 2 games, and Mike Vick has 5 TDs to 2 interceptions across the whole season. But, you know, I don't think that alone is basis for Vick being moved. I think the whole body of Nick Foles' work, I think it's time to see what.
Well, B. Austin, bringing up the numbers, it doesn't just stop there. And, like, you know, like we always express, we're far from numbers never lie type dudes. But, you know, you can always supplement your point with the numbers. And you pointed out the touchdown differential. And that's like 4.5 games compared to 1.5 games. He's completing 69% of his passes, where Vic is completing 53. His passer rating is like 127. Vic's is like 90-something, which is still good, because I don't think Vic is having a terrible season. But it comes down to these stats right here. In the red zone, Foles is something like 5 for 7, and that's where Vic is having his problems because he's not turning the ball over like he did last year, but drives are stalling in the red zone. And this isn't supposed to be an explosive team, and they're explosive until they get down into the red zone, and then it seems
yardage.
Like they have no clue
they're explosive
what they're
yardage,
doing.
Not point.
Exactly, and once you get down there and there's no more yardage to be had, they have no clue what to do. The team seems different under Nick Foles when they get down there because he's a little more accurate in tight spaces. You know what I'm saying? He can get the ball, you know, to a receiver running a quick crossing route in the end zone. Also, Nick Foles has 4 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter this season, where Vic has 0 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. So, you know, the numbers aren't everything, but the numbers do tell somewhat of a story. Now, like you just said, it has been 1.5 games for Nick Foles. He may get the starting job. He may get in there, and his numbers may fall back down to earth a little bit. But I was already on the bandwagon of give the dude a chance. Like, I didn't understand why the Eagles even re-signed Mike Vick in the first place, and that's not a shot at Vick. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, he's on the team. I root for him. You know, I thought he was having a pretty good season. I didn't think we were going to go anywhere under him. But I think Nick Foles does have some talent. You know what I'm saying? He's not a name that you bring up in that quarterback class of last year, but from what I've seen, seriously, and I hold Ryan Tannehill a little higher than I hold a lot of other people, I think he's just as good, if not better at this point, than a Ryan Tannehill. So, you know, if he can get his shot to at least prove to coaches what he can do over a certain amount of time, I think Nick Foles should get that. Now, he's going to start this week because there's no point in starting a Vic that's less than 100% because it takes, you know, if he's not mobile, then what's really the point? You know what I mean? Foles is more accurate on the, you know, intermediate and deep passes. You know, even on screen passes, he seems to run that stuff better. The only difference I see that may favor Michael Vick in this offense, when I look at both of them and compare and contrast, is the offense runs faster under Mike Vick. But like I told you guys on Field Vision last night, I'd rather be more successful than faster. Like, I can care less about fast. You know, that's that Chip right. Kelly stuff. But I think Foles deserves a chance. And people say you shouldn't lose your job to injury, but how the hell do you think Mike Vick got the job in the first place?
FOH.
So
yeah, yeah,
we wouldn't
doubt.
Know
no
what
doubt.
Tom Brady is if one of your clients hadn't have gone down, duh.
Exactly.
No,
number one
got,
moneymaker
didn't
go down.
I just got a breaking news, like sports story come across my ticker, and I don't even know why it's breaking news, but this is one of B. Austin's old favorite players. Remember Victor Page?
Yeah.
Yo, don't tell me
Victor
he's
dead. Yo, Victor. No. Victor Page just got sentenced to 10 years in prison, right?
I know it had something to do with crime.
I thought he was already in prison.
Listen, they said Victor Page has been arrested 33 times since 2010.
Damn.
And this,
I thought, hold on,
Jimmy.
I thought you were going to say 33 times since Georgetown. You said 33 times since 2010. Come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, 33 times
how's
since
he still
2010.
Walking the
hold on, though. Listen to this part. He also, in 2003, got shot in his face and lost his right eye, so he walks around with a patch.
We knew that.
Listen to this one, though. They said he jumped out of bed. He was in a fight with his woman. Jumped out of bed. He pulled her hair so hard he tore it from her scalp. He dragged her into the bathroom, threw her in a tub and started running hot water on her while punching her in the face. Then he went into the kitchen, grabbed a knife, stabbed her in her right hand and thigh. The chick ran outside, got the cops. He got arrested. This is the fourth time she called the cops on him. But now he got to be 10 years in prison.
That's all he got to do for that?
All I know is why is this breaking news, Victor? Why is Victor Page breaking news for one and for two? Yo, what's wrong with this boy?
Yo, Doc Bay and I have had the privilege of, or I don't even know if it's a privilege, of playing with the dude, pick up ball in the D.C. area, and it's sad to see the talent that was wasted with dude because he was every bit of an NBA player, but he is a head case. Like, he's right. Really a legitimate.
But, yeah, let's
not wait
for any
more seconds. I just got one thing
to
say to that
say,
dude, man.
Stay away from the crack. Which I think
no,
is pretty good advice. Unless you can manage it socially, Dan.
I got one thing to say to him.
He can't manage.
Show him your Victor Page.
The way you can.
Hey,
Victor
Jimmy.
Page wins this
luckily, we hadn't given that award away yet, but I think this would have been the first time in the War Room history that even if we did give it away in the first hour of the show, he would have just took the award from whoever got it.
Oh, he definitely would have. Hey, Victor Page, man.
He would have robbed Adrian Peterson of it because that was going to
clown.
Yeah, he definitely would have. He definitely would have. Couple quick things. Josh Freeman is starting Minnesota. Is anybody surprised that Josh Freeman is starting?
Nah, I knew when they picked him up. It was a matter of weeks, so whatever.
Okay, all right.
It was a matter of him learning the playbook.
Peyton Manning's return to Indianapolis. What do you guys think about the game?
Yeah, let's go out on this a little bit. I don't know, man. Y'all know, I like the Colts, but I'm still not exactly sold on them as contenders. So I really think they don't, they have no chance of winning this game. And that's not because, the Broncos are the end-all, be-all. I just don't think, they have a pretty good home field advantage, but I just don't think they're ready to be serious, serious contenders yet. Like, they may be a product of their division, like much like we think of the Cowboys. I mean, Tennessee is doing some things to surprise people, but who really believes that?
Go ahead, Jim.
All I was going to say is I think that they're going to be geared up for this game. I was actually going to go against my own team, trying to be objective and pick the Colts to win this game until I found out one of the representatives from the Smith-Miller gang was coming back to play. Von Miller will be back this week.
Shut up.
So, since Von Miller is back, I'm still rolling with Bronco gang. But I think the Colts were looking ahead to this game last week, which is why they came out flat and lost that game against the Chargers, because this is, a big game for them because they're going to be giving Manning, a Blumpkin and a statue and his number, all that kind of craziness. So
I would love to see the Colts win the game, but I just don't see it, I see them going to 4-3 this week.
Smith Miller gang. Go ahead, be awesome.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Yo. Got Peyton taking it in the house that he built. Now, the funny thing about the Colts is defensively, I think Denver's defense is a little suspect. But I saw what an athletic tight end can do to the Colts linebackers specifically and safeties. They have no one that can cover in their linebacking core. And Mr. Jones, he's a little too much for linebackers that can't cover.
You mean, who are you talking about? That's Julius Thomas?
Oh, Thomas, yeah, I said Mr. Jones.
I'm like, who Mr. Jones? Andrew Luck has been, he's part of Peyton Manning, the Manning Passing Academy for years. So, they're pretty good friends. Actually, back in 82, Oliver Luck, Andrew's father, was Archie Manning's backup in Houston. So, this game has a lot of little storylines. These families are very, acquainted with each other. So it's friendly between them, but, once they get in between the lines, Peyton is coming for blood. Andrew Luck should be out there for blood, because as much as he tries to downplay the fact that, I'm not replacing Peyton, I just happen to be playing on the team that he played on. Doug, a lot of people are looking at you as being Peyton Manning's replacement. As a matter of fact, you are the reason why he's no longer on the team, because they saw an opportunity to get you, so they let him go because they were unsure. So, he's going to be out there to try to prove something. I think it'll end up being a very good game, but not that close. it may get, I think Denver may pull away in the end.
First of all, Luck is second year QB.
I say 31-20, Denver.
If Luck falls flat on his face, that's no indictment of what he is today and what he will be.
We got to roll.
I'll forgive you the second gear, QB. But anyway, thanks for joining us in the War Room, good people. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, Facebook, Twitter, all the calls that chimed in to holler at us. For those we didn't get to, we apologize. Special thanks to Fred Perdue, as usual, for joining us to talk college football. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for the greatest sports talk with all of the internet. We'll be talking to MMA fighter Kyle Sechik about his upcoming bout with Dave DeMickey at Shogun 9 in Baltimore next week. Until then, enjoy your weekend, enjoy your week, and we'll see you right back here in the War Room. Catch us on Facebook, Twitter. Also, our video content can be found at warroomsportstv.com. And as we always say, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We shall see you chumps on top.
Jimmy, know the blueprint.
Yo,
every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dev, PJ, be often. Stop.
Pay on replay, warroomsports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial. Call it 323 Brooklyn 0012. If you're going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk sports. Showtime like magic in the block push. Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports. Yeah. You know? Jimmy. Dev. DJ. Y'all back. See you all soon. I'm shot. Up and coming on the team.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.